start by just giving me your name?
Mm-hmm. I'm Josephine Hallock.
And where and when were you born?
Well, I was born actually in Nottingham, England, but I was brought up to Scotland when I was just a very, very small infant.
And your family came to Canada in what year?
No, my family didn't come to Canada at all. I came out here alone in the Depression. I landed in Montreal and Vancouver after a train journey, 1931, April 1931. And I actually came out to get married.
Ah.
Right in the Depression.
And had you met your future husband?
Back in Scotland, yes. Uh-huh.
And when you came to Vancouver to get married, did you take a job here?
No, I didn't. I had enough to go on, and I stayed around for about a year. And in the meantime, my fiancé was laid off from the Union steamships, and that gave him a very bad period of depression. And so we called the whole thing off. The end of that.
Had you been working in the old country before you came over?
Oh yes, I was working there, and of course when coming out into Canada at that time in 31, there was very little that you could get in the way of work of any kind. Even if you had a trade, you still couldn't get a job. And after about a year, I decided that, well, I better strike out on my own. I didn't want to go back to Scotland, so I decided to stay on, and I got a summer job as a grocery clerk, and it was all right. They were very kind people, and then it wasn't going to get any better, it was getting worse, so I decided that the best thing I could do in order to save expenses would be to take a housekeeper's job with or without children. And that's what I did. And I started out, believe it or not, about $5 a month, and looking after an infant child and a young toddler. And that only lasted for a short time because the people weren't very well off anyway, just needed help for a short time. So then I left them, and I got another very good position as a housekeeper, which I stayed with that family for, I can't just remember how long, but I think it was 3 years or 3.5 years. And I'd had two jobs actually in that period of time, till I decided that I'd had enough, I'd learned enough about the conditions in Canada and the conditions of how domestic workers were treated. And I myself was fortunate in the sense that I was treated very well, but I knew of girls and women who were not. And so I thought, well, I've got to get out of this. And so I went into General Hospital, and I got interested in dietetics, and out of that I got very interested in nutrition.
Mm.
And I stayed there till I got married.
Okay. In terms of the kind of conditions that domestic workers face, what were the wages like on an average, and how did families treat the women who worked for them as domestics?
Well, in those early days, it was really a pool of cheap labor because people were desperate for jobs. And I know that in 1939, 1940, 41, 42, the going rate, which was upheld by a very prominent person in this city to be quite reasonable at 45 cents an hour. So I concluded that it must have been quite a bit less in the 1930s. Except if you were on farm labor, you got a little bit more, but then it was seasonal. And the hours were long, and you were at the beck and call of the family, and you know, you were just treated like a servant, and there was no rights or no conditions. You were supposed to eat in the kitchen, and you weren't allowed to mix with the family, and you had a little tiny room, and you were privileged if you had a nice room with bath, and of course those days there was no radio or TV at all, and you only had half a day off during the week and every other Sunday. So those were the general conditions. But as I say, I was lucky. I really was. I had a very, very nice people to work for, and I appreciated that, and I learned a lot from them, and I think they learned from me too. But I knew of other people that were really badly treated. They, you know, they just had no rights. They were regarded as like a piece of furniture in the house. They were useful, and they were at the beck and call of the family and the children any hour of the day or night.
Were there any attempts made to organize domestic workers?
Not in those days, no, none. There were no attempts made to organize domestic workers until 1943, the first attempt was made by the original Trades and Labor Congress of Canada, who were in the top position of labor. They were the Labor Parliament in that time, and then the councils and federations were Trades and Labor Councils of the Trades and Labor Congress of Canada, which is a different title to what we have now. And it's under that auspices that we attempted to form an organization for domestic workers. Quite a lot of work was done, actually. I took it very seriously. We had a fairly active membership of women who were in different kinds of positions, were all dissatisfied with the wage structures and the kinds of things that were expected of them. And we decided to, I can't just remember what the wage structure was then. It was certainly not any more than about 45 cents an hour. And then it went up a little bit, you know, bit by bit, year after year, it went up a little bit. But, you know, all still under a dollar an hour. So what we wanted, we weren't so much concerned about the wages because they tied in the room and board with it, and many of them were getting fairly good accommodation and food, good food. So they counted that in. But we wanted the whole of the domestic workers as a group to be taken in under the provincial government workmen's compensation, the Hours of Work Act, and the Minimum Wage Act. And what was the other one? No, that was the three, the important ones. There were no vacations with pay or anything like that in those days. Those were the three important acts. And we had several sessions with people in the government. Through Mr. Gervin, Rolly K. Gervin was the one who was very interested in us, and he helped to set up meetings. We had one meeting of the cabinet, if I remember rightly, and the minister in charge of the whether it's health and welfare, I think it was health and welfare, I can't remember, it seems so long ago, his name was Weir, and he had a pretty good reputation of listening to people and being very sympathetic to different things that were brought before him. And he went to the cabinet with our proposals that we be regarded as the same as the other workers in the province who were taken under workmen's compensation for injuries, because, you know, the home is the place where most injuries occur. Mm. You know, falls and all kinds of things happen, burns and scalds, when people are in that kind of service. So the compensation was the one thing they wanted, and then the work hours of work out in order to curb the long hours that these women worked. This not only in private service, but in nursing homes, and they were notorious for overworking their people and paying poor wages. And they went to the cabinet, our proposals went to the cabinet, and the cabinet turned it down completely, much to Mr. Weir's chagrin, and said that, well, they sympathize with the women and so forth, and most of these men had servants in their own home. And they said that you couldn't interfere with a man's home, it was his castle, you couldn't go in and organize, how could you? You couldn't rap on the door and say, I want to come in and organize your help. That just was not heard of. So that went down the drain. And then from then on, we began to build a case so as to strengthen it for some future time. And in the meantime, I got in touch with the National Association of Home Helps, I think they were called, Home Helps and Home Aids in England. They had a pretty large organization in England, and got a lot of correspondence out of that and learned what was going on in the old country. We also got a lot of factual material for what was done in Sweden, in the Scandinavian countries, and how they treated their women in this line of work. So we had a pretty fair grasp of what we wanted. Mm-hmm. But like everything else, you know, there was not enough interest by a lot of people. And they said, well, domestic workers, domestic workers, they looked upon them the same way as an agricultural worker or a migrant worker, you know, just at the bottom level. And the main thing we wanted to do was to raise the whole status of the industry and bring to these women who were working in these positions a sense of worth and a sense of respect for what they were doing in a home. Right. That they were very important people, looking after children and looking after the house and the cooking and all the rest of it. And that was one of the main things we tried to do, was to lift the attitude of the women into one of very strong self-respect for themselves. And we're able then to stand up to an employer who, you know, took them for granted or maybe came lashed out at them once in a while. So the upshot of it was, though, that there wasn't enough provincial support, really, for that kind of an organization. Even the people that pretended to give us the support and say, oh yes, we know it's bad and so forth and so on, but there's very little we can do because you can't organize a man's home and so forth. And they sort of took it from there. So we just plowed along for a while and got a lot of facts and figures as to what was going on in other countries and tried to build it up. But eventually it petered out because the membership started to drop. They moved from job to job. And just like any service industry today, the hotel and restaurant employees, of which this is my life pin here, this big one, and a life member of the organization here, and this other one is the office employees, 20, I just got it this week. And they had, you know, they began to despair of ever getting anywhere because the membership dropped away and it was hard to build it up again. So latterly we said, well, we'd let it rest for a while. Maybe there would be somebody in the Trades and Labour Congress of Canada would come out and help, but it didn't turn out that way. So, but I understand that there has been a recurring interest over the years because of the women's attitude to work and the kinds of things that are going on now in the 1970s. Yeah.
When you began to organize domestics, were you a domestic yourself?
Well, only in the sense, as I say, when I took these jobs because there was nothing else you could do in those Depression days, and so I knew what it was to have the responsibility of being a housekeeper, and that included a lot of things, you know, running a household.
How did the campaign begin, the domestic organizing?
Well, we sent out flyers to organizations asking for their help, for instance, in getting us names of people. And we tried to contact people in homes through other girls who would meet maybe outside on their day off or something like that, and just try hit and miss, really, you know, when you think of it now, trying to get people interested in this. The labor movement were interested, there was no doubt about that. And only, as I say, it didn't flourish enough to, you know, become a very strong organization at all.
Which organizations began the work, and who did you then contact for support? Was it like any women's organizations, like the Mothers League, or was it
no,
a union? Or?
No, there was no women were interested. They thought that was beneath them to be even mixed up with domestic workers, you know. That was a cut below the level. And there was a couple of people here in this city, and I think both of them are still alive, who served on the Unemployment Commission during the war.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was had been in business for herself. She knew what it was to work up a business, and yet she was the one who put forward these proposals in the talks that we had, that 45 cents an hour was quite adequate. And I didn't forget that. In fact, I haven't forgotten it to this day, you know.
Mm.
But it was just, you know, it was the times, and you had to go along with it.
What kind of women were domestic workers? Were most of them young and single, or?
Some of them were young, yeah. Some were single and had no other skills. And some of them were middle-aged women who'd had a lot of experience with their own families and were pretty good cooks and housekeepers. Yeah, there was a mixture of them. Mm-hmm.
And did the war improve conditions for that kind of organizing?
No. The women, some of them went off into war jobs. And that was one factor, you see, that... Well, that was a factor in much of the organizing in the labor movement, because the women started to flock into the munitions factories, you know, and war material factories, and they were well paid, you know, for a wartime condition. So they were in there. They just, if anything, the war probably, and when I'm looking back on it now, the war probably made the start on putting women in a place where they were valued, because they were taking the place of men.
Mm.
And they did a good job. They did an excellent job during the war. None, all the people I heard that talked to me about women in jobs, and they said, well, the women did a magnificent job during the war years. They put their backs into it, and they turned out the production. You know, they really did it. Of course, they did it for money. They, you know, money was a big factor, and they were making good money, and they saved their money. And then, of course, after the war was over, some of them had husbands and sons that were in the front lines, and came home either as vets or came home wounded badly, or even became widows, you know. So there was that whole thing changed. The whole thing changed for women after that war. That was the beginning, really, of women getting a sense of identity about their place in the national picture.
How did you personally become interested and involved in the campaign to organize domestics? How did you find out about it?
Probably it was through my husband, because he was a card-carrying trade union man and a good worker for more than about 55 years altogether. So he was interested in the labor movement at that time, had been interested before I met him. So when I met him and we were married, then of course he said, you want to start and build this thing up. You know, if you're going to go anywhere, you have to find out where your support is in the labor movement. So I think he is due the credit for really setting some kind of inspiration towards me, saying, you know, you can do it if you really want to. And then he was able, through his contacts, because he was a bridge carpenter and he was in the carpenters here, and he was able, through contacts that he knew, old-timers, that said, okay, well, go and see so-and-so and go and see somebody else. And then one thing led to another, you see. And then finally Mr. Girvan thought it would be a good idea of the Trades and Labour Council at that time. We used to meet in the old hall on Beattie Street. It was called the Labour Temple. It was, since was all torn down, of course, but there was an old hall there. And in fact, those two chairs are relics. That's why I'm holding on to them, because they were relics. These two chairs were part of the old Labour Temple. And that's really all that's left of the old Labour Temple. And from then on, things worked out. The women, as I say, dispersed into other jobs, and some became older and they became ill, and then the thing just petered out. But there was always a feeling that someday, you know, it would be returned to some kind of a status.
You became involved in this campaign in 1943, is that it?
Well, that was the beginning when we decided that we should have an organization, yes.
When did you begin to be sympathetic towards trade unions?
Oh, right then, when I married my husband, really, because he was a strong trade union man, and he was the one who said, you know, he said, if you have an interest in this thing, then you better get busy and get to know what's going on in the labor movement. So I became a delegate to the Trades and Labor Council, and I've been a delegate ever since to the Trades and Labor Council. Not this past year, because I've been, with my injuries, I wasn't able to get out at nights very much. But up until a year ago, I was a pretty steady attender at Trades and Labour Council, Trades Council's meetings. It was Trades and Labour Congress, Labour Council at that time, and of course, and the merger came in 1956, and it was Canadian Labour Congress and it's Vancouver and District Labour Council here, and the BC Federation of Labour.
Were you initially a delegate for the domestic workers? Is that the union or?
Yes. Uh-huh, that's right. And then I became a delegate later for the hotel and restaurant organization, hotel and restaurant employees.
When did you begin to work again after you had married?
Not really any, because my husband was not very, he didn't approve of a wife working. And I wanted to go back to the hospital, because at that time, when I started to work in the hospital, I was one of the few women who were in the women's unit, organized under the civic employees. And when I left to get married, the girls, I think I was the first president of the women's unit, and it wasn't for very long, because Bill Black came in with his civic employees and took over the women and brought the whole thing into one union, men and women together in the one group. And that was about that time that I left to get married. I had about 2.5 years, I think, in the general. I learned a lot there about hospital and what went on there, and the kind of food that's mm-hmm. what I was interested in, was nutrition. So that put both my husband and I, we became interested in nutrition. We studied healthful food and all that kind of thing from then on, really. I was very interested in it. so led into a business for us later on in later years. And I never forgot my experience in the General Hospital. During the war, it was rather scary because we were imminently expecting Japanese to come up the Georgia Strait and invade us. And they were seen, the submarines were seen off the coast, you know. And of course, in the hospital, everything was under strict control. Everything was blacked out, and you were working in small areas, mm-hmm. which were extremely hot, and no air because all the windows were closed and lights were half dimmed. And it was really a very, very bad time to be working in a hospital. But we got through it, 1939, 40, 41, and then I left in 42.
The Civil Employees Association that had been there, when was it organized?
I don't know. It was there when I got in there. So it must have been an early organization.
And the women were in an auxiliary of it, not direct members of it?
No, the women were direct members, but there was a women's unit. Of the hospital, of the hospital women's unit of the civic employees.
Why was there a separate women's unit?
I don't know. You know, those days, like everything else, you know, they say, well, women's unit or women's auxiliary, but it was more than an auxiliary. It was actually an organization to organize women in the hospital. And I got $40 a month at that time, and I worked nights for about nine weeks, I think. I took night work, and $40 a month and one midnight meal. And then there were deductions taken off that. You were paid twice a month. Now the hospital employees, all employees in the hospital union, when AG was, they're not in the Congress anymore, and they're not in the Federation anymore. They're not organized into any of those now, they're just affiliated. But I know quite a number of people in the hospital union still who are very good friends of mine. But we had, they set it up, and when I left in 1942, they were really getting into their stride then to organize hospital workers on a larger scale, and to go to the hospital boards and say, look, you know, got to better have better wages than this, you know, wartime, you know, after the war. And so they gradually built up their organization to a pretty good organization, so that now the women who are working on wards, like ward aides and ward kitchen maids, like who look after, you know, the whole kitchen thing, the food and the trays and the going out and the coming in and the dishwashing and all that. They get, I was talking to one lady not too long ago, I told her $40 a month. Well, they make more than that a day.
Mm-hmm.
No. So that just goes to show, you know, what union organization can do. Of course, times have changed. Money's more inflationary and all that. But before inflation hit Canada, the wage structures were pretty good in the hospital unions. But I didn't go back. My husband wouldn't let me go back to the hospital to work.
When you had worked there earlier, what kinds of things made you get involved within the association, the women's unit? Why did you become an active member of it?
Of what now? The hospital? Well, you had to. When you became an employee at the General Hospital, then you were expected to go in with the women's unit. That was part of the whole thing.
So it was a closed shop.
Not exactly. But you were expected to join the organization. Yeah, we did.